see. Can you see the slides? Let me ask that. Can everybody see the slides?
Not me. I'm audio only.
Okay.
But I'm on my phone, so.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I'm trying something new, but I'll try doing the slides now. Okay. Hello, and welcome to Tame Your Inner Critic. I'm your host, Kate Crow, the founder of The Shift It Method, and today we're going to talk about ways to silence the inner critic, take your power back, and how to have more happiness and satisfaction in your life. This is a webinar on the power that comes when we commit to our vision. Here's what I know. Humans are hardwired to survive. We endure and we tolerate. And on this call, I'm going to talk about what it takes to thrive. I'm going to talk about transforming your relationship to fear, because shifting our relationship to fear creates magic and happiness. Before I go over what the inner critic is and give you 7 points on how to tame it, I want to tell you a little bit about me. Like everyone else on this call, I'm very familiar with my inner critic. I've had to train myself to look beyond my comfort zone and embrace the edge that comes when I stretch myself towards my dreams. Here's a little bit about me. I've been in the business of transformation since I was 15. My first job was a salesperson in a high-end clothing store where I helped people feel beautiful on the outside. After college in the early 80s, I worked for the second largest advertising agency in New York City as a marketing specialist and for huge brands like Pepsi and Dodge. In that phase of my life, I was trying to convince people of what they needed versus what I do now, which is helping them to tap into what they know. In the 90s, I strengthened and stretched people's bodies as a Pilates instructor, and then I became a life coach. For almost a decade now, I've worked with all types of people, artists, stay-at-home parents, executives at companies like Microsoft, New York Times, the McKinsey Company, and Dow Jones, and I helped build a 7-figure coaching business as the head workshop leader and top earner for several years in the personal coaching division. What I'm really proud of is the PhD I earned along the way from the School of Hard Knocks. Shift It was created out of my own need to change. For years, I walked around as a victim, even though I would not have said that. When I turned 40, I began a decade full of huge personal tsunamis. Personal tsunamis are big life events that drastically alter the landscape of your life. I got divorced. One of my children developed a chronic mental illness. 2 years later, he committed a serious crime and was absorbed into the state system. In the midst of this, I found and lost love to a gruesome form of cancer. And these events forced me to find my power when I didn't feel I had any. They taught me that my power is found in being proactive and choosing consciously how I want to respond. I learned from these events that the answer to my happiness is me. As a coach, I help people change their relationship to themselves and the world. I shift people's feelings or thinking about what is possible. People hire me because they want to have more confidence, clarity, and focus, and because they want results. Today's webinar is about intentionally creating outcomes and dealing with the inner critic that sidelines us and keeps us stuck. So if you're feeling stuck, frustrated, powerless, or like a hamster on a wheel going nowhere, your inner critic is in the house. Often in our lives, we go through periods of feeling stuck or paralyzed, and our inner critic makes problems feel chronic and insurmountable. Self-doubt can be paralyzing. How many things have you not done that you wanted to do because the inner critic warned you not to? The inner critic is a bully who is reinforced by our perfectionist trait, and both live by the theory that it is better to be safe than sorry. Now, I agree with that theory sometimes, but let's face it. Better safe than sorry when it comes to trying something new or broadening our horizons kills countless possibilities and experiences. It keeps us on the sidelines of our life. Most of life's rewarding moments involve being stretched outside our comfort zone. In fact, true satisfaction is usually found in areas of growth and extra effort. I mean, how many times have you wished you hadn't climbed that mountain or pushed for something you really wanted? It's very common for people to attach to why they shouldn't do something and to look for what is wrong, what is missing, or what doesn't work in a situation, instead of focusing on what is possible and what could be created. We're afraid of stretching and taking a risk outside of what is known. Staying in our comfort zone means that we will stay with what is familiar, even if it's not working or comfortable. A more accurate word for comfort zone is familiar zone. And just because it's familiar doesn't mean it's comfortable. I mean, if things were so great in our comfort zone, why aren't we sublimely happy in it? Think of the comfort zone as a warm pond. It can feel nice, but eventually you're going to want to get out. Our dreams and hopes lie outside of our comfort zone. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. My client Hannah came to me because she wasn't happy with her job. She gave herself the gift of coaching as a birthday present when she turned 40 years old. Approaching that milestone birthday, she was like, wow, is this it? She was living on the East Coast. She had been working at the same company for 9 years. She was making good money, but she wanted to get out of the warm pond. As we began working together, she revealed that one of her dreams was to move to the Pacific Northwest so that she could change her quality of life. When I coach with someone, we begin with an exercise called the envisioning process. She wrote down what her ideal job would be. She imagined a light-filled apartment. She could really see her life there. She began looking for work out west, and then the inner critic began whispering to her. It was going to be a big move. It might not be better. She'd have to leave her family. What about the house she owned? It needed improvements before it would sell. So we talked about her other options, and she decided to try and make things work at her corporate job by switching within the company, and that worked for a while. The point is, she was scared to make the big move out of her comfort zone. She tried adding creativity into her life by making jewelry, and that stretched her outside her comfort zone a little bit. But still, a year later, she wasn't happy with her company. Coaching together, she learned that she was in charge of her happiness. She learned the ways that her inner critic spoke to her, and she did work on her self-limiting beliefs. She did a lot of personal work looking at the meaning of her fears. She worked on shifting her perfectionism to self-compassion and excellence. This spring, she decided she was ready to try moving out west again, and she began looking for jobs. It didn't take long. She found a job at the company where she had written about in her initial envisioning exercise. They flew her out for a full day of interviews. Within a week, she had a job offer for nearly double the money she was making, plus better perks. It seemed like a done deal, except that she had a house to sell. This house had been the sticking point before. It housed her inner critic. There were things that needed to be fixed and painted. She had two cats. The inner critic had a field day pulling out all sorts of reasons why she shouldn't go. But here's the thing. Why she wanted to move was stronger than those reasons. And it wasn't just the money. It was the quality of life. She saw she was investing in herself, and she now had the confidence to say what she wanted, really. 2 weeks ago, she moved to Seattle. On Sunday night, I received this text from her. On the eve of my new job, just wanted to say thank you for helping me focus my dreams to get here. You've been a blessing in my life. Stretching beyond our comfort zone takes belief and courage. Believe me, the move across the country stretched her. It stirred her self-doubt, and she cried a lot until she got there. Within 24 hours of moving, she found the apartment she had written about. She texted me that she was pinching herself that this was really happening. Hannah needed to tame her inner critic to get to Seattle. I want to help you to find the same level of happiness and confidence. So let's now talk about how to do that. The inner critic begins with being able to identify it. Taming the inner critic begins with being able to identify it. Know the noises it makes in your head. Understand its logic and triggers. Our comfort zone is our safety zone. It's constructed by our ego, and everything outside of our comfort zone is deemed dangerous and unsafe. Inside the box of our comfort zone are our beliefs and interpretations, our reactions and defense mechanisms to the experiences and the big events in our lives. Everything, absolutely everything, is subject to interpretation. The question is the narrative that you're listening to working for you or against you? What are you believing? Your past does not have to determine your future. Hannah's inner critic had a heyday with her pending move to Seattle. She had moved around a lot as a child. One of the narratives she was up against was moving equals unsettledness, loneliness, pain. Disrupting your life equals crazy person, looking for something that cannot be found in moving. As a child, her mom moved her and her sister from coast to coast, all in the name of love. So when Hannah wanted to move for her happiness, she, of course, encountered the argument of her inner critic that reminded her of the craziness of her childhood and the pain that resulted from being yanked from one community to the next, all in the name of love. There were many interpretations. The question is, are you fighting to justify your interpretations? Are you needing to be right about your interpretations? In coaching, we had to tease apart Hannah's thoughts and theories that she had formed as a defense against the pain of her childhood so that she could see that they didn't apply to her situation now. So let's talk a little bit about what the inner critic looks like. The inner critic is a relentless judge who gauges how well you're doing or not doing by looking at others and seeing how you measure up. Its commentary can be exhausting and cruel. You can't be happy if you're afraid of what people say. Hannah had a good job on the East Coast. Many well-intentioned friends and family thought she was overreacting and she should be happy. But taking ownership of your life and your desires sets you on a path of fueling your dreams. When she went for her new job, she wondered if she had the skills to handle it. Did she compare equally to the other people who were interviewing for the job? Certainly, the interview process was hours and hours long, and she had to focus and be present and answer the questions instead of listening to her doubts that were supplied by her inner critic. Another example of taking ownership and not comparing yourself to others is what I see with many of my clients who are looking for love. Often people, when they look for love, they think that they have to be the prettiest, the smartest, the most talented creature around so that they will be picked. They compare themselves to others. It's easy to look around and to think that everyone else has love, that everyone else has figured it out. Something must be wrong with me. The inner critic loves that line. Stay in the safety zone. Don't put your cards on the table. But when you're looking for love, deep love, it's best to really be truthful with yourself and to say what it is that you want out loud to yourself and to the world. Declare what you want. Stand for what you want proudly. Don't waste your time trying to manipulate a person who isn't right to see the light. Be what you want to have. Shine that light brightly, and you will attract the person who wants that light. My client Carolyn did this. For years, she tried to be what she felt guys wanted. She didn't breathe a word of wanting a committed relationship because she didn't want to scare them off. But she kept attracting guys with commitment issues. Once she got clear that she wanted committed love and she said that out loud, her game changed. And within a few dates, she met a man who said he wanted committed love too. The point is, she had to stop believing that what she wanted was too much. She had to commit to her desire and her vision and stop comparing herself to others and thinking that something was wrong with her. Putting her stake in the ground and declaring that what she wanted in love took courage, and believing that she can have that is the second part of the work. So what does the inner critic sound like? Get to know its voice inside your head and the sensation that comparing yourself to others feels like in your stomach. Inside our heads, the words of the inner critic are toxic, overwhelming, and crushing. Are you kidding? Who do you think you are? No one is going to like that if they only knew who you really were. You can tell how overwhelming and crushing those words are. But you want to look now at the logic of the inner critic. It can feel very real and be relentless. The motive behind it is to keep us safe and to promote our survival. The inner critic is not an enlightened thinker. The inner critic is like an internal alarm bell that is hell-bent on your survival, but not your growth. It takes life very personally and experiences life through negative filters of criticism, fear, and judgment. The acronym for fear, false evidence appearing real, says it all when you think about the logic of the inner critic. The inner critic really rolled it out for Hannah when she thought of moving. All of a sudden, the experience of her childhood provided ample fodder for why she shouldn't do it. But as she looked at it, she saw that it was false evidence appearing real. So why is the inner critic so powerful? No one likes to feel judged and to feel that they're not good enough. Our desire to be perfect is our desire to be loved and to have approval. There is a difference between striving for excellence and perfection. Excellence can be obtained. It is created. Perfection is based on an expectation of how something is supposed to be. Perfection focuses on what is missing. Perfection does not exist. When perfectionism is motivating the inner critic's chatter, it helps to ask yourself, what would happen if you weren't perfect? What really would be the consequence? Would you really lose love, your job, your livelihood? Are you looking for external validation instead of aligning with your dreams, your values, and beliefs, and feeling the power that comes when we do that? Think of all the great leaders of our time, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, to name a few. Their dreams and the impact of their dreams were bigger than public opinion. They were willing to play full out for their visions and their dreams. When we put a spotlight of awareness on the inner critic, it begins to lose its power over us. There is a saying that knowledge is power, and I would shift this a little and say that self-knowledge is power. So now let's look at the 7 points that will help you take your power back. Okay, point one. Become aware of what it feels like to be under the spell of the inner critic. Identify the words in your head so you know the language of the inner critic. Does it have a particular flavor? Self-doubt? Harsh judgment? Does it look like depression or powerlessness? These voices all have at their core a self-limiting message that keeps you from playing big and makes you feel small. Interrupt the autopilot of the negative voices of the inner critic with an awareness. Point number two, name it so you can claim it, then you can change it. This is a slogan borrowed by the 12-step program work, and it says that once you can identify it and claim it as being a part of you, you can change it. Determine what it feels like and what the nature of your thoughts in your head sound like, and then you can identify the inner critic out loud. Say, the inner critic is in the house, out loud to yourself, to a coach, or to a tribe of people who want you to have your dreams. It really helps to create a community of like-minded people who do not participate in your smallness and who want to help you to power through. Find a tribe of people who you can share your vision with and ask them to help you to problem solve and move through your perceived limitations. In the case of Hannah, who moved to Seattle, this was huge. In the beginning, there was the stirring of desire. She began as a private client, and then she moved into a power-up group. Initially, she wasn't so sure she'd like the group, but as time went on, she saw that the group encouraged her dreams. Her first step was to put her jewelry online, and she did this with the coaxing and the accountability checking of her partner and the group. Then she felt supported by the group to expand her world wider. When she encountered obstacles, they helped her to solve them. Most importantly, she began to ask for help. The inner critics can't win when they are outnumbered. So point number three, take contrary action. The opposite of the inner critic is self-compassion. Recognize that the voice of the inner critic is there to protect you, but what is it protecting you from? Failure? A mistake? Ridicule? Consider that it takes a risk to have success. Change how you view mistakes and begin to look at mistakes from the lens that what does this have to teach me? How does it benefit me? Have compassion for the part of you that is afraid. But turn that fear into action so you can experience inspiration. On the eve of moving, I called Hannah to see how she was doing. She said a man she had been interested in was at her going away party, and he finally seemed interested. Code 4, I think I'm leaving the possibility of love. Wow! Can you see how tricky her inner critic was? She was crying a lot. She wondered out loud to me if she was making a big mistake. But as we talked, she remembered her dream, and she was able to say, I'm afraid. I'm feeling so much. By the end of the call, she was also feeling proud of how much she had accomplished in getting the move together and how good she felt about handling her goodbyes. She was able to see that she could feel sad and inspired by being compassionate with herself and letting her feelings be there. Point number four, the inner critic is a judge that is worried about being judged by the world. Let's talk about judgment for a minute. It's an external reading of ourselves that says, I get my worth from what you say about me, versus an internal reading that says, I know myself, I see myself. No one has power over us unless we give it to them. Connect to why you want something. What does it mean to you? What do you desire and why? When we are connected to our vision and why we want something, we tap into something that is uniquely ours. Martin Luther King had a vision for the world where all men were created equal. He preached the value of interconnectedness as a state of being where everyone benefited. He was judged by many and ultimately murdered by a person who had a negative opinion of him. He changed the world with his thinking and with his commitment. He was willing to push outside his comfort zone. He didn't get stopped by public opinion. Instead, his commitment to his internal beliefs changed people's opinions around the world. Align with the power of your desire and your vision. Take ownership of your life. Dedicate yourself to self-mastery and use your mind, heart, and wisdom to create the life that you want by focusing on what's possible. Be a creator. Point number 5, is the negative chatter informing you of something you want? If your inner critic is saying you're not good enough to play tennis with someone whose game you admire, what is it actually saying? That you want to be able to play tennis better? That you admire the other person? Does that actually mean something negative about you? Do you need to take a lesson? Let the feeling inform you about what you might need or want. With this knowledge, you can take an action that will grow you. This is evolution and personal growth. Point number 6, focus on loving actions towards yourself and others. Self-doubt and negative thinking can send us into a death spiral of feeling bad. We can get clogged, ruminating, and lost in the abyss of negativity. Gratitude, appreciation, savoring the moment, doing a random act of kindness can lift us out of the pit. Once out, we can think more clearly about solutions and actions. Point number 7, the truth sets us free. Excavating the meaning under the inner critic's negative chatter sets us free because we can see that it is not us that is bad. What action do you need to take? What new perspective will benefit you? Redesign your attitude and alter your perception. We create our life with choices. Consciously choosing how we respond is the ultimate power. So to recap, our inner critic can be tamed through awareness. When we are aware of the inner critic, we have a choice to empower the inner critic or not. Identify your feelings. Notice them. Let your feelings inform you instead of control you. The tricky part is that we really, really believe our feelings, but our feelings are not facts. Our feelings are illuminating something that we want, something that we need to be aware of, something that will evolve us. Use your awareness of your feelings as a clue and a cue to change. My inner critic often sounds like self-doubt. It says I don't know enough, that what I'm attempting to do is too hard. It tells me I'm going to fail, or rather, it warns me I might fail. I really experience this when I'm doing something that involves technology. Technology scares me. It triggers an old belief that I have that I can't do something on my own, which comes from my childhood and not trusting myself enough to figure things out. I can easily make it mean that I'm stupid when I don't know something. I go into confusion. Understanding my inner critic works this way gives me my power back. Now I know that when I'm confused about technology and feeling bad about it, there is something that I need to learn. And the solution is that I learn it or I find someone to do it for me. Don't get stopped. Find a way through. Go after what you are committing to instead of getting caught in the weeds of your feelings that are generated by your fear. When we commit to the actions that will take us to our visions, it is the best gift we can give ourselves. It is a long-term investment in your self-worth. The better you get at keeping your commitments, the better your life will be. Back to the story of Hannah. There were lots of moments in her move where she felt overwhelmed by obstacles, moments where she wanted to give up, but instead she kept handling what came next and then what came next. She stayed with her commitments instead of letting her fears take charge. To finally get her house ready so she could move on a certain date, she asked two family members who lived in other states to come and help. They all got it done. What happens is that when we are triggered and stressed, we revert to our survival techniques, and we will unconsciously gather evidence to keep ourselves safe by reinforcing limiting beliefs or interpretations about why we shouldn't do something. In the case of Hannah, the memories of her disruptive childhood gave her ample reasons and justifications for why she shouldn't proceed with the big move of her dreams. She had bought a house that represented security, and letting go of that house was her biggest challenge. It required physical work to sell and presented the greatest number of headaches and tests for her to solve. We want to watch out for believing our feelings as a way to commit to ourselves. Often people will say that they are honoring themselves by honoring their feelings, and what is happening is that they are sidelining their dreams because scary and uncomfortable feelings have come up. So ask yourself, are you putting your feelings before your commitments? Feelings don't have anything to do with commitment. Commitment is a decision. Are you associating your edge with pain or a breakthrough? The edge, that line where we are pushed to that feels like a breaking point, and yet on the other side is our breakthrough. There is struggle at the edge and then amazing satisfaction. It is a test. If you've worked out with weights, you know that edge. If you're a woman who has had a baby, you know that edge. If you have ever wanted something really badly and had to work for it, you know that edge. Associating the edge with pain will stop you. Associating the edge as a step towards a breakthrough will reward you. Tame your inner critic by altering how you see mistakes. See mistakes as opportunities to improve yourself. Failure is one of our best teachers, but we have to shift how we see failure and how we see our mistakes. If we can separate ourselves from our mistakes and distinguish that maybe our action was wrong, but we are not wrong, we will stop taking failure personally, and you'll see that the mistake or failure is an opportunity to help us be a better self. So what are you making something mean about you? There is an enormous power in being able to shift a negative interpretation into a growth opportunity that benefits you and the situation. So, okay, now let's do an exercise where you can meet and tame your inner critic. If you can, grab a piece of paper and a pencil and write down what is something you really, really want. What is something that will stretch you outside of your comfort zone? Take a moment and write that down. Now write down why you can't have it. What does your inner critic sound like? What are your reasons and justifications? What do they tell you? What actions do you need to take? Is there something you need to learn? What are you saying about yourself? Is it really true? Can you identify a fear? Is there an action that you could take that would move you closer to your vision? When can you commit to doing that? The keys to taming the inner critic so that you can feel happier and free to achieve what you want are to become aware of what the inner critic to become aware that the inner critic is unleashed. Replace it with self-compassion and desire. And then, what can you learn from the situation? If you want help getting clear on identifying your fears underneath your inner critic, or you need help moving through your fears or working through that exercise that we did earlier, you can go to my website at www.katecrow.com, and you can sign up for a free 30-minute strategy session. Let's tame that inner critic and get your power back. So you can use that. We'll use that 30 minutes to go over and do that exercise together. So now I have a special treat. And the special treat is that Hannah is here. And I want to give her a moment to talk to you about a little bit about her experience about coaching and taming her inner critic. Hannah, do you want to introduce yourself and say a little bit about you?
Yeah. No, and I first just want to say I was I'm actually grateful for the opportunity to speak to people on the call, because my journey started with, as was mentioned, at 40, really just looking at my life going, I'm not really where I want to be. I can't say that anything is necessarily bad or wrong, but I'm not manifesting really what I want in my life, some areas like in love and a job and a career. And I started looking to women that I respected and asked, how were they getting to the places, and how were they envisioning and being able to articulate their dreams so well? And the common response was a life coach. So I embraced the opportunity, spoke with Kate, and really had a great connection, and just so put my faith in the opportunity. And it took a lot of work, and I think, you know, being a scientist or having that training, I really wanted things to be, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, and it really is more of an iterative process as you start to learn about yourself and you learn about your fears and you start to learn to articulate and be clear about what it is that you want and why is it that you want. And doing that really helped when things became obstacles or when things popped up or problems and things didn't go smoothly, like with this move, I could have easily fallen into my victim mode saying, oh, you know, the world's against me and I just, this isn't right for me, and that clearly somebody's trying to tell me this isn't the right, you know, place to go, and any of those excuses that you can make for yourself to stop moving forward. And through working with her, you know, both on a personal level and through with the team, you know, I developed the tools to help get out of my own way, and that was really what I was looking for. And being able to be clear about what I wanted helped remind me, like when those things came up, I was like, what is it that I really want? What is it that I'm making this mean? And let me just fall back to that and keep moving forward. And that's really how I got here. And so that's why I was so honored to participate in the call tonight, because this process has really helped me in my life, and it's become part of my life, part of my habits, part of my dialogue. And the team really helped me have compassion for myself as well. I mean, watching other people from different careers and ages and experiences that we're all in the same boat, and we're all trying to make the most out of this life and figure out what it means. And this was just one tool that worked for me. And it would be great to see this process help other people kind of get what it is they're looking for in their life, because it really is such a rewarding, wonderful experience when you can finally start to make it happen for yourself. It really kind of self-speaks into itself. You start to feel more powerful and more engaged and more vulnerable, and all those wonderful things are scary, but you start to enjoy it. So a big thank you to Kate, and if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer anything, but I have to say it was really interesting to hear my life story told, and I choked up a couple times, so it was still very vulnerable, still very, you know, emotional experience for me, so.
Yeah, I do want to say a little bit about perfectionism, because that was, I think that's such a huge thing for people to deal with is we, I think we confuse perfectionism with and excellence. But maybe you want to, that was a big one for you.
Yeah, it was a big one. It still is a big one for me. And honestly, in this first week at my job, I'm watching myself compare myself to people, and I have to remind myself, this is about what you can bring to the table. It's not about being perfect or anybody else's experience. You were hired for, you know, again, trying to be clear what it is that I'm bringing to the table and that I can do this, and really having the tools that it's given me just a baseline to kind of work from. But when we were doing the analysis as far as where the inner critic is and what's really getting in my own way, it really was this perfectionist trait that I think my entire family actually has. And so it's a very strongly learned trait throughout my entire life. And as I started to look at what was getting in my way, I realized this perfectionist trait was like a little octopus that's wrapped its tentacles around every aspect of my life. And when I could start to get clear about how it was impacting me and how it was getting in my own way and what I was making it mean to protect myself, to make myself look good, to get approval, to, you know, I had all these thoughts about what it meant and how that would make me succeed, and really all it was doing was getting in my way, because all I was doing was trying to protect myself. So when I could start to understand that about myself, when I'd watch it pop up and go, oh, there she is again, and just kind of take a step back and go, what is it that I really am looking for? How do I really want to connect with people? What is the experience that I really want to have here? And then start to let that go and really embrace my life in a different way. It's not easy, and it's a lot of work, but and I feel like it's always a daily kind of thing, especially when something like that's been a part of your life for so long. It helps to have a group of people, and that's one of the things I like about the group. It helps to have a group of people remind you and keep you accountable to the goals that you're setting and trying to work through this stuff, and have people remind you, like, oh, that's happening again. Your perfectionist trait's popping up, and you go, oh, yep, and you can start to laugh about it. And so you start to develop a sense of humor about all your little quirks and really have some compassion about these challenges that we each have.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really great point, and just how our perfectionist trait is really tied into bigger fears. And when we're able to start to see that and replace it with that desire to be excellent, I mean, that's a good goal. But it's not necessarily tied, it's not necessarily connected to a specific outcome and how something has to look. So I think that, yeah, but I think it's one of the most common ways that people sabotage themselves and create heartache. So, yeah. And I love the way that you've just said it's like an octopus whose tentacles are everywhere, because it's not just at work. It's usually finds its way in all areas of our life. So, well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience, and thank you. It's been really amazing to watch your journey and your transformation, and I can't wait to see what comes out of this next move. So thank you, Hannah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so for those of you who want to go deeper and really address your inner critic, I have a Power Up and Shift It group that will be starting December 1st, and it will meet 3 times a month for 6 months. It will be on Thursdays at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. This is a group where we will work the basic steps of the Shift It Method, and we'll spend December planning and strategizing using the envisioning process so that you can identify what it is that you want to create in 2017 that will make it amazing. This is the time for you to really dive in to what will make a difference in your happiness factor. I love working in small groups, and this group will be limited to 15 to 20 people. And besides the three group calls where we will go over the curriculum, there will be a monthly 30-minute one-on-one coaching calls. The group costs $400 a month with a down payment of $200, and the Power Up and Shift to Group is really for people who want to move their lives forward, and you know, and it's an amazing time to do it. It's the beginning of December because we'll be kicking off the new year with a really strong vision. So I want to end tonight by saying that my wish for all of you on the call is that you are bold in your desire to have what you want. And my wish is that you have courage to take the risk and to know that on the other side of your inner critic's fear lies what you want. You are the creator of your life, and your life is your creation. Feel the power of that declaration and boldly go where you have yet to go. If I can help you in any way, please sign up for a free strategy session on my website at www.katecrow.com. And I look forward to hearing from you if I can help you. Have a good evening and good night.